So I am really excited because we have the state police on pretty frequently, but in studio for the first time, at least since I've been on the air, we have both Sergeant Christine Jeltsema, who you should be familiar with, but we also welcome for the first time Sergeant Luke Davis of the Connecticut State Police. Thank you both for making the drive to our WACC studio in Milford. We really appreciate it. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us in studio. This is awesome.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. And welcome, Luke. Very exciting to have you here and to have you with our WICC audience. They're very nice, I promise. If you could actually start, Sergeant Davis, with talking about some of the recent statistics we have for Connecticut roadways and what we have found in recent years that's become a real priority for Connecticut State Police.
Certainly. So right off the bat, I'm going to start with explaining that our level of wrong-way drivers calls for service so far this year to date is, as of yesterday, 160 calls for service. So oftentimes when we have these calls for wrong-way drivers, there are scenarios where it is self-correcting and an operator may realize the error and correct themselves before a trooper even gets out to the area. However, we do still have accidents involving wrong-ways. So of those statistics, we've had 2 accidents without injury, 9 with injury, and 3 of those of the 9 have been fatal. And that includes the tragedy that happened last week on the Merritt Parkway. In addition, we've also had several wrong ways that have resulted in DUI arrests. And that number so far this year is 17.
Wow. And I know the DOT, Josh Morgan and Garrett Ucolito have been on the show very frequently. We've had them on. And I feel like in the last couple of years, they've become almost like co-hosts of the show. It's pretty crazy. But they say a majority of these wrong way incidents, substance abuse plays some kind of factor in it. Is that correct?
Yeah. And in a lot of the scenarios, what we're seeing is that there is some kind of intoxication involved, whether that's driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs or both, for that fact. So driving under the influence is not only illegal, but it's incredibly dangerous, and it's impacting one's ability to make rational and responsible decisions behind the wheel. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a perfect example. Just the other day, there was a wrong way on 91 in Windsor that Troop H was investigating, and that person got on the highway the correct way, but then made a 90-degree left turn across all 3 lanes, struck the median, and then continued to drive in the wrong direction in the left shoulder.
Wow, that's wild. And I mean, and I think I actually saw on our partners at News 8, I think they were talking about that I-91 wrong way crash this week. And it seems like age is not really, because sometimes people have it in their mind that, you know, people get confused, it seems like, I mean, unfortunately, we saw what happened last week. This was a college student, but then you see what happened on 991. This is an older gentleman. It seems like age is not really, I would say, a factor per se. It seems like it could be anybody involved.
So I can say during the day, if there's some type of wrong way, a lot of times those individuals are elderly and they are confused. But the ones that happen between 10, 11 p.m. at night to 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, there's no age range for that. And we have noticed that that is the most deadly time for wrong-way drivers is between 10, 11 p.m. at night and 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And those people typically, what we have found through our investigations, may have been under the influence of alcohol and or drugs or both.
And when you look at like the statistics that Sergeant Davis just shared on the air, are we sort of on track right now? I can remember, Sergeant Jeltsema, when you came on in 2022 after that Memorial Day weekend, which was horrific, probably one of the worst on record. I'm not sure if it still is. But are we on track to now have one of the worst years with deadly wrong way crashes in Connecticut? I mean, we already have had, you said what, we've lost 7 people so far? How many people have we lost?
Well, there's been a total of 3 fatalities, and that ranges from one person dying in a crash up to, at least to my knowledge, 4, such as what happened last week.
Yeah, which is pretty horrible. So we're, again, not even halfway through the year, and we're on track, which is nothing that we should be boasting about, obviously. But I think the question kind of becomes for that time frame, like you were saying, where it's just nothing good really happens between 10, 11 o'clock at night until 4 in the morning, one of the questions we get a lot is, then what do I do if I'm caught in that time? Like, I work at 3 in the morning. Right. So what do you do if you don't really have that option and you want to avoid a wrong way driver? What do you do?
So we know that wrong way drivers tend to use the left lane thinking that it's the right lane. So we encourage anybody who's traveling between those hours to utilize the center or right lane. Be mindful, look ahead, and not be distracted, I guess. You know, pay attention to what's going on. And if you see headlights or something, find a safe spot. Call 911 immediately because this is a true emergency. We don't encourage anybody to try and stop the vehicle, not get in front of the vehicle, but just be aware. And you know, when you call 911, give a location, if you can, a description of the vehicle so that we can get out and stop this vehicle before it turns into either a serious injury or fatality.
And I know, too, this is kind of a DOT, but I wasn't sure if you thought it would make a difference. We have one of our law enforcement experts who comes on the show a lot, and he had said, he's a former chief in Fairfield. He had said, because when you're under the influence, your direct eye contact is like 4 feet in front of you. He was saying maybe having more either reflective signage when you're going the wrong way on the highway, not just the on and off ramps, but also some kind of either paint in the roadways. Do you think that would be effective? Do you think putting resources into also on the highway, not just the on and off ramps, would make a difference to stop wrong way incidents?
So, yeah, absolutely. And we do definitely value our partnership with the Department of Transportation. And DOT is making many proactive efforts in terms of curbing this behavior, to include the wrong way driver alert system, which has gone statewide and continues to grow up to and including the shoreline now. So that we're actually getting live notifications if somebody actually does get on the highway in the wrong direction. So it's giving us an early warning to actually get troopers mobilized and respond to that area to correct the behavior before it becomes a tragedy.
We have Connecticut State Police in studio with us. Both Sergeant Luke Davis is here and Sergeant Christine Jeltema. And both of them, I was just talking to them in the commercial break, have been with the Connecticut State Police over a decade for Sergeant Davis and 2 decades for you, Sergeant Jeltema. That's amazing. Thank you both so much for your service. We really appreciate it. Let's continue talking about our roadways. The Click It or Ticket campaign that launched at the beginning of this week goes on until the beginning of June. And was just curious if we could kind of overview sort of the goals of this campaign and what we've seen on Connecticut roadways when it comes to seatbelt use.
Sure. So the Click It or Ticket campaign is really geared towards promoting education and awareness of the existing state law. So any occupants in the front of a vehicle, be it the driver or the front seat passenger, are required by state law to wear their seatbelts. And I know a lot of people aren't fond of that because they think that it should be their choice. And I get that logic, but there is rhyme or reason to it, okay? The reason that we have to is because it's a safety measure, right? You never know what's going to happen on the roads, especially with what we've been seeing here with a lot of these wrong way crashes. And unfortunately, what ends up happening is you can get tossed around in a vehicle in a bad accident or even ejected. And speaking from personal experience in that regard, I have seen some myself, scenes that I've responded to, be it as the investigator, as a supervisor, where people have been ejected from vehicles and they stand no chance of survival when that happens.
Mm. I actually was always surprised it took so long for us to make it a requirement for the whole car. I never really understood that it was like an option for the back seat until recently in our state law. I never really did understand that. I thought if you're in a moving vehicle, regardless of where you are, I never really got that. But I'm glad that is not the case anymore. Yes. So what is the first offense if you are found not wearing your seatbelt?
So it's an infraction. Or depending on the circumstances surrounding the traffic stop.
Sure.
Typically, depending on the history, motor vehicle history, we can give verbal warnings. You know, the education piece, you know, discussing why it's important to wear a seatbelt, that, you know, not wearing a seatbelt is a violation of a motor vehicle statute. However, if there is a motor vehicle history, which we're able to pull on a traffic stop, you know, then it can go all the way up to an infraction. And I believe it's up to 100 it used to, it's been a while since I pulled somebody over for a seatbelt, but it's around $100, close to $100, something like that. It all depends.
That continues to increase, you know, and it changes roughly every 5 years, some of the fine amounts as we know them. And I've experienced that myself where I look at something and say, well, that's different because that definitely was not like this previously. So the fine amounts do fluctuate depending on what's decided by the state legislature. It is imperative to know that, though, although we do have discretion in terms of conducting motor vehicle enforcement under the Click It or Ticket campaign. More often than not, a trooper that may be engaged in doing enforcement on that is doing so on a grant. Mm-hmm. So grants operate a little bit differently, and there is a much higher probability that that will result in an infraction ticket than a warning.
Got it. Makes a lot of sense. So again, we have Sergeant Jeltema and Sergeant Davis here with the Connecticut State Police. Also, warmer months ahead, and we are already seeing more and more motorcycles out on our roadway, and there is a lot of the time, I don't think it's just a Connecticut thing, I think it's in general, especially though with those months that we have the snow and we see the motorcycles go away for a little bit and then they come back. Sometimes we have some not so great behavior on both accounts, both drivers and motorcycle riders, with sharing the roadways. Anything in particular you want people to be thinking about, especially as we are in the spring, summer months, more motorcycle riders are going to be out on our roadways?
Yes. So like you said, warmer weather is coming. I've seen motorcycles out and about. It's just being mindful, knowing that there potentially could be a lot more motorcycles out there. As for motorcycle operators, reflective gear that they can wear, although it's not required, but we recommend a DOT-approved helmet. We do know that anybody under the age of 16 or has a motorcycle instruction permit only, they are required to wear a helmet. So that is out there as well. But just being mindful, that's, you know, for everything with driving, being aware of your surroundings. When you're at a stop sign, and make sure you look and double look to make sure there's no motorcycles pulling out of a driveway or a parking lot. Look for motorcycles because they are out there, and a lot more are going to start coming out as the warmer weather is coming upon us.
And my understanding, we have, you know, some listeners who are motorcycle riders, and they say it's very different than operating a car. So for them to slow down, for example, in traffic is a whole different beast than cars. And sometimes if you aren't aware of that as a driver of a vehicle, you get those fender benders, and they don't have as better of a shot, I guess, surviving that than if you're driving, you know, a car, I guess. So I wasn't sure if you were able to address that as well, just the understanding that you've got two totally different vehicles now trying to get through traffic on Connecticut highways, which is just delightful. But they function very, very differently.
They certainly do. And I think there's a very simple rule of thumb that we can put into place, and a good advisement for anybody that operates a motorcycle. Half the wheels equals twice the caution.
Half the wheels equals twice. Okay. So what is it? What do you mean by that?
So anybody on a motorcycle is on two wheels. It operates differently than a passenger car with four wheels in the manner and in how it handles, as well as being exposed exterior-wise and not having a full cabin around you such as you do in a car. Mm. So half the wheels equals twice the caution.
Mm. I love that. I've never heard of that before. I'm going to keep that. That's a good one. And another thing, too, if people want, obviously, more information, I know you have, I think your next recruitment is sometime in the middle of the summertime, but if people want more information, I know your website is great, giving press releases, keeping people informed, and you have a very active social media site as well. Where can people go for that information?
So the website for anybody who's interested in our process and hiring is beaconnecticuttrooper.com, all spelled out, Be a Connecticut Trooper. Anybody can go on there. They can subscribe and get notified of any updates that we have. For example, when our open process starts again, they'll be notified. And all the information that they're looking for, what the process looks like, the academy, some of the things that we require for becoming a state trooper.
All right. Fantastic. Well, Sergeant Christine Jeltema and Sergeant Luke Davis, I want to thank you both so much for, again, making the drive down here and coming in studio and sharing such important information. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Yes. And thank you again for serving in the Connecticut State Police. We also appreciate that. Don't know what we would do without our Connecticut State Police right here on WACC.